Daniel Kahneman talks about, you know, two systems in our brain, system one, system two. System one is your fast brain, primitive, emotional, your desire for survival, so your fight or flight response. Man alive, you can't say evolutionary. I can't say the word response. We'll do that again. But your fight or flight or your freeze response, your desire for food, it's all very much primitive, emotionally driven. So fantastic on the savannah 200,000 years ago, because, you know, you want to notice threats. You want to notice the saber-toothed tiger. You don't want to be ultra-positive and go, it looks friendly to me. You want to see it as a potential threat, because you might have been out there hoping to get some gazelles for lunch. But if you're not careful, if you ignore the challenge, the fear, you won't be having lunch. You'll be someone's lunch.
Welcome to the show. I'm Joe Horton. On the Guild of Dads show, we unwrap weekly the incredible stories, skills and expertise of the world's most captivating dads and experts, and I unpack with them the topics that will captivate you. Fascinating individuals, best-selling authors, entrepreneurs and ultra-athletes, professors and relationship experts. This episode today delves into the world of teenagers. We were one once, we may have one in years to come, or already have one right now. Whatever way you look at it, it's a tricky time. Hormones raging, navigating an increasingly complex world, and not to mention the digital age we now live in. But how exactly do we equip our kids to tackle this time in a way which sets them up for adulthood? Every conversation we have translates the experience and expertise of our guests into practical knowledge you can use to better understand yourself as a dad, and in the process improve your physical health, mental health, relationships, career, and the way you show up in the world as a role model to the next generation. Now, if you're anything like me, learning about yourself continuously is an ongoing process. How you react to things, how you can respond to life, and how you can constantly grow and evolve. But there's a gap between school and home, and in that gap lives the cultivation of emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and self-knowledge. My guest today is international speaker and best-selling author on change, resilience, motivation, and leadership, Paul McGee, aka the Sumo Guy. And he's a guy worth listening to, having been sought out by the likes of NHS, Tesco's, Harrods, Manchester United, the British Olympic Association, and Virgin over the years. We delve into the growing gap between what we learn at home and at school, how Paul's new book is useful for young people but also parents, the societal pressures on kids to be academically successful, and why this may not be actually what employers are looking for in the future. We also discuss the fascinating neuroscience between why we behave the way we do and how we can flip this to our advantage. If you ever wonder how some of my amazing guests get to where they are in life, the athletes, the entrepreneurs, those making a massive impact on the world, I can tell you that pretty much all of them follow a very deliberate plan or system of some kind. This is exactly what I do too, and I'm revealing how you can implement a plan and system in your own life completely free in my ebook, The Dad Blueprint, over at guildofdads.com/dad. Incidentally, many of the people I interview on the show will be leveraging the power of similar systems to radically level up their lives. So you will be in amazing company. And now to my conversation with Paul McGee. Paul, welcome to the Guild of Dads podcast.
Joe, it's really good to be with you. As a dad of two, I'm looking forward to sharing, I suppose, my successes of one or two, and mainly my struggles, I think.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I really have enjoyed reading your book, The Sumo Secrets to Being a Positive, Confident Teenager, which I picked up a few weeks back. And I showed it to my 11-year-old daughter and I said, here, do you want to have a look at this? And she grabbed it off me, and then I didn't see it for around about a week while she chewed through it herself, sort of thing. So I've been asking her what she thought about it and getting her verdict. And she was like, yeah, it's actually quite good. I was like, so are we going to have to work through some of this stuff together, are we? And she was like, yeah, maybe, and maybe, sort of thing. So she's holding her cards close to her chest.
Joe, if when a young person describes my work as quite good, that's the equivalent in my head of that was outstanding, because I think, you know, some kids can be faint in their praise. You know what I mean? It's like, so if someone says it's quite good, then I'm flipping thrilled, I'll tell you. And I know one of the things about the book was not just the content in it, but, you know, as you'll see, I mean, I spent ages working with an illustrator to make it really, really strong visually and engaging. Because I think that's, you know, it's not an online resource. It's not something which they scroll through. It's a physical thing they pick up and they actually read. And so I felt it had to be very visually engaging. And already some parents have said to me, we've read through it once, we're now starting to revisit it, and there's certain ideas in the book that hopefully will stay with children for a long time and help them navigate what, you know, when we're going through adolescence, puberty, man alive, talk about that being an interesting time, in inverted commas, for young people. And I don't think we always appreciate and recognise just what they're going through at times.
Yeah, and what I really liked about the book, Paul, was that I think that when you're kind of growing up, you have this where you have the expectations of what you need to do kind of academically when you're at school. And also when you're at home, your parents might speak to you about kind of how much they can support you, and in terms of, you know, what you can talk about with them, and what you and you are very much a kind of product of your kind of your surroundings, in terms of if your parents don't really talk about stuff, or if they kind of hold their cards close to their chest, then that will set an example to you. And you have to, you're kind of left to navigate all of the bits in between by yourself. And what I really liked about the book was that it covers that kind of that grey area of self-knowledge that, even to be fair, a lot of adults won't have really realised the way in which they can kind of harness the power of this kind of what I would call this grey area in between these two worlds.
You know, I wrote the book. You're so right, Joe. I wrote the book very much thinking of, you know, young people in mind, maybe from the age of like 9 onwards. So although it's called Yes, The Sumo Secrets Being a Positive, Confident Teenager, probably relevant from 9, you know, years 5 and 6, sort of like 9 and 10-year-olds. But what I've realised is, as you've alluded to, the amount of parents who've read it. I've even had grandparents who've said they've read it, and they've learned from it. In fact, I'm doing some work with a school who've actually ordered over 100 copies for their pupils. And one of the things that one of the head teachers said to me, she said, Paul, I just had to read it for myself before giving it to my 14-year-old son and my 17-year-old daughter. She said, but I actually want some of my staff to read it, because some, they might be teachers in the school, but some of them act like teenagers. And I've just found it, as you say, we talk about how do you support children, how do you support parents? How do you support teachers? And it's about not overwhelming them with complex theories and ideas, but good, accessible insights that they can understand and apply not just to their lives, but then help children as well. And the other thing to think about, because I'm very keen on, is there anything we can do to create conversations between young people and their parents? Because when you're going through adolescence, all of a sudden, it's not the approval of your parents that you're after. It's the approval of your peers. So there might be more conversations going on amongst your mates than there are amongst your family. So again, I'm hoping that the book, and I sometimes go, you know, I set a challenge and, you know, ask an adult what they think about X, Y, and Z. And do adults remember when they used to have to carry their suitcases because they didn't have wheels on them? Almost trying to encourage that kind of conversation and that communication. So I think it's relevant for people of any age. Someone was interviewed recently on a radio station, said, so what age groups are aimed at? I said, it's a fairly niche, narrow gap I'd go for. Anyone between the age of 9 and 90 will probably benefit from it. So there you go.
Yeah, yeah. And I think what's interesting as well is that there's this, you know, I think a lot of people nowadays, both young people and parents, and well, all age groups really, there is this kind of perfectionist culture that kind of has pervaded our lives. And I remember interviewing someone and they were talking about how there was this trend towards what was called errorless learning. I think it was in the 1940s where you had to get things right, sort of thing. And I think there is this kind of legacy that has kind of skipped a few sort of decades and come down the line in terms of not just academia, but I think it's just it's this idea that we are going to put so much more pressure on ourselves, more so than anyone else would in any way, shape or form. And it kind of comes from nowhere, this notion of putting pressure on ourselves, because no one else is expecting us to put pressure on ourselves, you know. But it's really weird, this the whole way in which we kind of beat ourselves up in terms of what we should and shouldn't be doing and how we shouldn't be performing, and the very kind of black and white in terms of success or failure, and there is no grey areas or middle ground or anything in this. And your book very much extrapolates that.
We've got, you know, it's good to have intentions to improve and get better. And I think for parents, they'll go, I didn't have the opportunities you've had. I don't want you to waste your life. I want to make the most of it. But, you know, when I was at school back in the 1970s and early 80s, my school wouldn't be appearing in some league table compared to another school in the area. And so for teachers, there's a lot of pressure, not so much about creating learners, but creating children who pass exams. And how does that look in the statistics? How does that look in the data? And there's so much around data and statistics that isn't measured, like what's the well-being like within the school? What's almost like the atmosphere? Is there a sense of fun and hope? And there's no, it's what do you get in maths? What do you get in English? Which I get on one level, of course I do. But there has been, society puts a pressure on young people. And also I think there can be within education. And again, I don't want to be blaming anyone. I'm just saying this is what happens, is this one size fits all. I think you need to be appreciative. We all need to be. Look, some kids, you know, mature and develop at different ages. And also some people, it's just like, I'm not going to be that academic. And that's not writing them off, but it's just saying maybe their strengths are in other areas. And we need to value the diversity of talent that is within all children and cultivate, not this sense, because when I was a kid, it was very much about don't get things wrong. It wasn't even just about be successful. It was like avoid failure. So if you get a C is okay. A D, you're bad. You failed, because D is a failure. If you get a C, I'm all right. I'm not going to get into trouble. But I wasn't almost encouraged to achieve A's. It was avoid the D's. And now, though, I think there's even more pressure on, well, did you get an A? Was it an A star? Now we're going to numbers. And it's just flipping heck. And I love it when parents will go, really proud of my child. You know, they post it on some Facebook. You know, they've worked really hard for their exams. I'm really proud of them. And that's all they say. Not because they've achieved X, 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 Y, and Z. I'm really proud of them because they've worked really hard. And then you get other parents who, I'm so thrilled. They got 9A stars, et cetera, et cetera. And you know how that's making, you know, and I feel humbled. Well, no, you're flipping not humbled. You're flipping bragging to everybody else about how amazing your kid is. And you know what we do with our two? Because often when our children did GCSEs and A levels, but there was a lot of pressure because my son and my daughter would go, well, my friend's been told that once they've done their A levels, if they get certain grades, they're going to get a laptop, or they're going to get this, or they're going to get that. And we decided we're not going to give you anything after your results. We're going to reward your efforts and your work before you get your results, because we want to acknowledge the work you've done rather than mummy and daddy love you and accept you and you're valid because you achieved a certain standard. No, we want to just love you and you're valid because you're a human being and we want to love you unconditionally. But we do also want to acknowledge the effort you put in. You put the effort in, we're going to acknowledge that. It's not just purely dependent on the results. So we're living in a very, very pressurized environment for children where there's expectations from family, from schools themselves. And then, of course, with the whole rise of social media, you know, what did you get? What did you get? And again, I love parents who when they're asked, oh, how did your children do in their exams? They go, they did really well, thank you. They don't automatically spout off what the actual grades were. They just go, yeah, they did well, or not as well as would have liked, but it's not the end of the world. Whereas others are going, show me the grades, show me the grades. No, I'm not going to flipping show you the grades.
Yeah, and I think what is interesting about this as well is I've had discussions with entrepreneurs about this as well, and I never forget, I interviewed a guy called John Lee Dumas a little while back, and he said to me, he said what they're noticing now, entrepreneurs, is in actual fact, a lot of kids now are looking at kind of college and university, and they're actually thinking, well, is the juice worth the squeeze in terms of the debt I'm going to get into, and would my time be better spent actually learning a skill or going out into the workplace and actually acquiring skills in the time that other people are kind of acquiring debt. But there is a big discussion, I think, within the entrepreneur space at the moment, and also, you know, businesses and stuff, in the sense that in actual fact, we don't want an education system that's turning out little robots. We want an education system that is rather than turning out people that are compliant and that can be academic and achieve A stars and A pluses. We would much rather, instead of having one person that's got a ton of A stars and A's, we would much rather have 10 people that can think outside the box and can come up with ideas, think on their feet, think differently and be different, than have someone that's come out that might be academically bright, but in actual fact, they've not really got any social skills, any way in which to converse with people on a face-to-face basis. Yeah. And a lot of these other different soft skills that are in between academia and that sit between academia and also what they learn at home, sort of thing. And this is where the kind of that grey area seems to be, and what your book really kind of delves into, these kind of soft skills, and but also self-knowledge and self-awareness of how to motivate yourself and impact yourself, but also impact the people that are around you as well.
Yeah, this is not, I mean, for me, it's not a book, clearly isn't a book on how to pass exams. It's how to make the most out of your life. And, you know, your daughter, I think you said she's 11. And I hope in some ways she carries that book, not metaphysically, but metaphorically, with her for the rest of her life. And that, you know, she could be in her 20s or 30s and she thinks, flipping heck, I've still got that flipping yes book my dad gave me years ago. But she flicks through it. And it gives her an insight. Yeah, I'm very much about, I think there's a lot of teachers, to be fair, who really want not to be produced, you know, we don't want schools to become exam factories, but where there is learning, where there is opportunity to have a diverse way of looking at things, and where seeing as, you know, whatever we define as success is not about whether you went to university or not, but are there avenues you can explore to fulfill your potential? I mean, you think about the global pandemic that we're currently in still, one thing you would definitely describe it as is it's been a big disruptor. And it's been tragic on certain levels, but there are good things that will come from this and there are opportunities that will come from it. And that's because the world was disrupted. And you think, wouldn't it be great if we weren't having a flipping global pandemic, but there were people who were disruptive, who thought differently, who challenged and who weren't prepared just to be compliant and regurgitate the knowledge of others, but actually come up with new insights and new ideas themselves.
Yeah. And to that point, there is a lot of discussion around that in terms of fathers and dads at the moment, you know, and I've touched upon this in the podcast recently, you know, how people are going to reflect going forward in terms of, you know, the time they're going to spend with their kids rather than spending more time at work, and, you know, how flexible working is going to maybe be different going forward, and people working from home and not being in the office so much, and commuting times and all this kind of stuff. So I think there is hopefully going to be a period of reflection coming off the back of this, and a massive kind of opportunity, provided it's grasped, if that makes any sense. So
the danger is when things do return to how they might have looked, you know, pre-March last year, is that we'll just go back and slip into those old habits. But I hope that there's certain things that families have done with their children, and they go, we'd never have thought of doing that, but how good has that been to do? And let's make sure that continues to happen.
Yeah, definitely. The thing that I noticed about the book, which was very refreshing, was that there is a very kind of positive and kind of uplifting tone to it, which is particularly at the moment with what's been going on. That was one of the things that I found most refreshing. And we've touched upon this notion of adults and also children understanding themselves better. How did you first become interested in this concept of, you know, self-knowledge and self-awareness and knowing oneself a bit better?
Sure. I mean, in many ways, the turning point for me, Joe, was I struggled at school. It's all comparative, isn't it? I did O levels, so that's how old I am, you know, now GCSEs. And I've got four, and you needed four O levels to get into to do A levels. So I just scraped in and did that. And I was always scraping by academically in one sense. But after university, did a degree which incorporated behavioural and social psychology. I got a high-flying graduate management trainee position. But within a year, I lost my job through ill health. Became ill with this illness called ME, myalgic encephalomyelitis, yuppie flu, chronic fatigue syndrome, whatever you want to call it. And at that time, this is in the late 1980s, someone gives me a set of cassette tapes. Boy, am I aging, just how flippin' ancient I am. And one of these cassette tapes, it was by a guy now passed away called Richard Denny. And he was more of like a bit of a sales trainer and sales guru. And he said something which I've never remembered word for word, but the gist of it was this: within every adversity, there is a seed of equal or greater opportunity. Within every adversity, there's a seed of equal or greater opportunity. And I'm thinking, I've lost my job. I'm really ill. I struggle at times to even wash myself. I was that weak. I would struggle to walk any distance. And I'm thinking, I think it's fair to say I have an adversity. But what those cassette tapes gave me was hope, because I didn't know anybody who'd ever got over the illness. So that didn't give me hope. But I began to think, okay, maybe I need to think about how I'll look at things differently. And, you know, I came across, over the years, two different definitions for the word hope. And one of them is helping other possibilities emerge. And another is helping other people excel. And I'm thinking, okay, helping other possibilities emerge. What could emerge from this? And how could I, you know, help other people excel? And you put those two definitions of hope together. And that brought me a greater desire to explore personal development, which up until that point, I'd been super, I wasn't just skeptical, I was cynical. You know, skeptical would go, not too sure about this. I'll give it a go. I'll read it. I'll see what I think. No, I didn't even get to that point. I was cynical. I'd sometimes see in a bookstore, you know, Think and Grow Rich, and I would laugh at the title. I wouldn't even pick it up. And all of a sudden, lost my job through ill health, don't know if I'm ever going to get fully well. And I suppose that was the catalyst to be starting to ultimately consume loads and loads of personal development material. And the thing is, I was ill for over 3 years. The nature of the illness was I'd improve and I'd relapse, improve and relapse. So I never knew if I was fully well or not. So when there came a point where I thought, I don't need my walking stick, I can wash myself okay, I can walk a few yards, and I thought I might try and get a job, maybe just part-time. The thing is, Joe, I couldn't pass the medical, so no one would hire me. So even though I wanted just to get a job just for maybe a couple of hours a day, anything basic, just to get a bit of purpose and dignity in my life, I couldn't get anything. So what did I do? I hired myself. I was amazing at the interview, standout candidate, and I passed me on flipping medical. You know, put up a mirror, breathe. It steamed up a bit. Right, you're on. When can you start? And it was from there. And I'll tell you, I came across this phrase by a guy called Zig Ziglar, American guy. Again, someone who's passed away. Not everyone I know has passed away, by the way. And he talked about that your car is a university on wheels. And that really did fuel the obsession, and I would call it an obsession, was every time I was in the car, put cassette tape on. And I was constantly learning. First year of business, I turned over, not profit, this is turnover, £2,300. I pay no tax, no national insurance, and my accountant actually sacked me. You know, not the most auspicious start, But boy, was I learning a lot. And gradually over time, things developed. I started to write books, get opportunities to speak at big events, you know, work with organizations like Manchester City, did some work with Sir Clive Woodward, and you know, do a lot of stuff in NHS and with schools. And it's kind of evolved. But, you know, I'll have been in business, you know, 30 years this month when we're doing the recording, March 2021, 30 years. So people go, flipping it, you've done all right for yourself. Yeah, well, I think it's fair to say not exactly an overnight success. It's definitely been a journey. And personal development has played a huge part in that journey. I have to say it. Final one, I'll answer this question. Jim Rohn, dare I say it, someone else who's passed away. There are healthy people in personal development who are living, by the way. But Jim Rohn, remember, I'm ancient. So I heard these people, I'm in the 30s. They were in their 60s and 70s. But Jim Rohn had this phrase, work hard on your job, but work harder on yourself. And I'll tell you, I went from ground zero, 2,300 quid turnover in my first year, to being a very, very different place. Not because I was lucky, although I'm sure that played a part, but because I took Jim's advice. I've got to work hard on myself, not just on my job.
Yeah. And it's I love that automobile university that Zig Ziglar says. And I think Brian Tracy mentions that as well, because he refers to him. And the one that I always listen to and always come back to is Les Brown, because I think his thing is always, he's I'm going to get inside your mind. He says, your job is to sit there and I'm going to get inside your mind and I'm going to make you believe in yourself like other people can't. And you've got to be hungry.
And the good news, by the way, I've got to interject this one, Joe. Those watching or listening, Les Brown is still alive and so is Brian Tracy. So that's good news. I'm not quoting from completely dead people. There's a few still alive as well.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's powerful though, because the thing is that, like you say, when you're driving along in your car and it's pouring with rain and you're like thinking, where is this going and where am I going and stuff? These, you know, you do these, when you're in your car, you're not, you're focusing on driving, but you're not focusing on, your mind is kind of wandering and your mind can be really kind of changed when you're listening to stuff in your car, which is why this, the strength of podcasts and why podcasts are so popular these days, because people can tune in and they can find out stuff they wouldn't have otherwise known. And if you pick up, I don't know, say you listen to 5 podcasts a week and you pick up one piece of information off each of them, that's 5 pieces of information that you wouldn't have had you not listened to those in the first place. So, and this is the power of it.
I'm just to interject, it's powerful. And do you know what, though? And we can learn not just from the people who are around now and entrepreneurs, but from the ancients, from the Stoics, from Marcus Aurelius. You know, in the New Testament, how about this for an interesting line in the New Testament? And it's not about whether you're religious or not, but hear about this. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. That was written over 2,000 years ago. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Not be transformed by becoming religious. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Old Testament, 3,000 years ago. Without vision, people perish. They don't flourish. Good to have some kind of purpose and direction and goals in your life. So this isn't suddenly, oh, in the last 30 years, haven't we got good at knowing about this stuff? It's been there for thousands of years, folks. Neuroscience now explains why all this stuff's valid. But you can, yeah, you can listen to your Anthony Robbins, your Les Browns, whatever you want to do, which is great. But don't ignore the ancient wisdom that's been there for a long time as well, that's got a lot of lessons for us. It really has.
Yeah, yeah. And I agree because, and again, it's something I've touched upon in this podcast in the last few episodes, this notion that people are rediscovering ancient wisdom at the moment. And particularly around mental health, people are having to, because we're running out of answers. And, you know, one of the things, one of the kind of bedrocks of Guild of Dads, if you like, is vision, action and meaning. And the reason being is that you develop a vision for yourself, you take action on that vision, and going on that journey is where you find the meaning. And this isn't a recent discovery. This is what people have known for thousands and thousands of years. It's just we in the in the modern world, we've forgotten how to do this because there's so many external things that we can use to sedate ourselves against these feelings. So, and once people take away those things, it becomes a lot clearer.
Enlightenment made us all more rational and we're going into our science. But what we were a bit arrogant about was thinking, so anything that happened before the 18th century was just like, you know, that was just what stupid people believed in those days. We have to, as a species, embrace a bit of humility and a real sense of curiosity, a constant quest for learning, and realize that some of those people that we've described in the past as primitive were a lot more sophisticated than we actually sometimes are. And the way we sometimes do life, maybe we're being a little bit primitive, you know, pursuing, you know, material goods and thinking that's what will make us happy. Well, I'm not against anyone, you know, pursuing material goods. But if you think that the more you acquire, the happier you will be, I think you need to rethink that one. I really do.
Mm, yeah, definitely. Definitely. I'm going to jump in here very quickly. If you have listened for any period of time, you will know that I place a massive value in having a group of other men around you to elevate what you think is possible for yourself. I want to tell you about the exclusive brotherhood I've put together called the Dad Circle, which is a group of dads committed to improving themselves in a number of areas in order to become the men and dads they always wanted to be. Not just this, but hardwired into the fabric of this brotherhood are a number of features, including weekly Zoom calls, monthly topics, challenges and assignments, together with a growing library of resources, fitness and mental challenges. You'll get just the accountability that you're looking for when you're surrounded by a group of other men looking to level up and go on a journey in exactly the same way. If this resonates with you and you would like to find out more, head on over to www.thedadscircle.com/join. That's thedadscircle.com/join. I wanted to ask you about sumo, because it's something you mentioned at the outset of the book. And I know that there are pictures of a Japanese wrestler in the book, but I know that sumo, from your kind of definition, because you love acronyms, and I can see that you love acronyms throughout the book. And just in general, but I know that sumo, it doesn't stand, it has another meaning other than a Japanese wrestler. Can you tell me what that is, Paul?
Yeah, it does. It literally was a catchphrase I came across probably back in 2002. And S-U-M-O started off its life simply meaning shut up, move on. And it was a kind of, and I think sometimes that's what we need to say to ourselves right now. Come on, I've been dwelling on this setback. I'm dwelling on the fact that things didn't go so well. It's time to sumo, shut up and move on. As it evolved, I started to think about maybe the shut up bit is also pay attention, take time out, stop, think, reflect, and then move on. Now, when we started to do work in schools, people were loving some of my sumo principles, as I started to refer to them, but they were a little bit nervous about, hang on a minute, you know, when parents are saying, my son George keeps on going about sumo, what is it? Feel a little bit awkward going, oh, it's an acronym. It stands for shut up, move on. You know, George is seven. We're a primary school and one of our values is show respect. And I don't think you show respect to people by telling them to shut up. And people said, so you need to change the title of your program. Now, the title of the book that came out in 2005 and became a Sunday Times bestseller is still called Sumo, Shut Up, Move On. But often now we've had to, you know, not rebrand it at all, but maybe just repackage it sometimes. And so it can also stand for stop, understand, move on. Okay. But the real bonus for you and your watchers and listeners is this. Sumo is an actual word. Now, interestingly enough, in Portuguese, it means juice, you know. But in Latin, it means to choose. And as a friend of mine, Drew Povey, is a leadership speaker, says, every day is a Tuesday, C-H-O-O-S-E, Tuesday. So every day of the week is a Tuesday. And part of what the book for young people, the book which is probably going to help parents as well, and all my material is about saying, let's make some better, wiser choices. Let's continue to do the stuff that's working for us, that we often do on autopilot without thinking, still a choice ultimately, but let's become more deliberate and intentional and live life on purpose rather than autopilot, and recognize your choices matter. You know, I remember being in my office at home, always had an office based at home. And a few years ago, my daughter came in really excited, wanted to tell me something. And the door's kind of like behind me. The door opens. I'm at my laptop. I'm reading an email. She goes, "Hi, Daddy, you all right?" I go, yeah, I'm fine, Ruth. She goes, "Can I tell you about my day?" Now, not every flipping child wants to tell you about the day. Let me tell you that. Often go, "How was school?" "Fine." That's all you get. My daughter is wanting to tell me a bit about her day and what happened at school. And in that moment, in that precise moment, whether I'm aware of it or not, I make a choice either to go, "Not now, Ruthie love. I'm just in the middle of this email, but I'll chat to you a little bit later." Or I make a choice to stop reading the email and to turn round my chair and to give her my eye contact and my full attention. And I think all our days are made up of these, what you might call micro choices, those micro connections. But you know what, Joe? They add up. Choices have consequences. So Sumo, sometimes it's about shutting up and moving on. Sometimes it's about stopping, understanding, moving on. Sometimes it's about getting that passion, getting the juices flowing. But also very often it's about, okay, I need to choose here. What am I going to do? And not do it because that's a habit or autopilot, because it's a deliberate, intentional choice that I make. So that doesn't involve any Japanese wrestlers, but that's a summary of Sumo.
Yeah. And I like that. I like that point around slowing down. It's slowing down and kind of being deliberate in your intentions and your actions and what you're going to do and what you're kind of not going to do. And particularly in that scenario that you just mentioned, that is a big thing for dads and parents with so many distractions and so many other stuff going on, particularly working from home as well, is that choice to be able to pause for just a split second and give full attention and full presence and full awareness to that person that's in front of you, which is tricky.
It is, and I think one of the things to interject in, and we've got more distractions than ever, particularly our wonderful mobile phones. And I'll be honest again, I've sometimes had like a date night with my daughter. I'm into my football, so my son's really into his football, so we naturally connected over that. We go to watch matches. I'm a flipping Wigan Athletic fan. Up the ticks! That's why I'm probably looking a little bit down and subdued at the moment. But with my daughter, there wasn't always a natural connection. Now, one of the things, again, I made a choice to do was to say, "Do you fancy going to London for the weekend, just you and me?" And that was a bit of a game changer. But sometimes it's like, well, you don't have to go to London, but how about going to Nando's? And this isn't the time, you know, my daughter's now in her mid-20s, but a few years ago, you know, iPhones came out in 2007. So, and she would go to Nando's and she would have a phone and she would still get distracted. But I made a choice. I might have my phone with me, but I'm keeping my phone in my pocket. Mm. Because, again, it's the lure of, oh, I've just had a notification. Yeah, let's be honest, you know, there's going to come a time, if we're not careful, where our kids have left home, which you might go, that'd be a flipping joy, Paul. But what I'm saying is where if you're not careful, they won't be communicating with you as much as you'd like, potentially. So, again, if they don't want to talk to you too much and they're there with you and they're not giving you their full attention, that's going to happen. But please don't have to plead guilty to, yeah, and when they were on their phone, I was on mine as well. Because sometimes, you know, when I was with my daughter, maybe having that Nando's, she suddenly put the, I'll say, "Who's that from?" And she go, "Oh, it's just from Emma." And I go, "How's Emma doing?" And all of a sudden, her phone was put to one side and she goes, "You'll never guess, Dad, what's happened to Emma. Or you'll never guess what's happened to her dad." And then the conversation came. So rather than being judgmental and going, get off your phone, maybe we are a role model and put our phone to one side. And then when they are engaging and sending messages and looking at funny videos on TikTok or whatever, going, "Hey, show me." Yeah. Well, you know, and use that their distraction as a way to cause a connection with yourself. That won't happen if they're on their phone doing their thing and you're on your phone doing yours.
Yeah, I get that at the moment quite a lot with that Avatar. My youngest is absolutely hooked on Avatar. My oldest is hooked on Avatar. So whenever I asked her about Avatar, she's going to tell me about Avatar, regardless of whether I understand it. And
oh, yeah, totally. I mean, my son, some of the stuff he was into, you know, I hadn't got a flipping clue. I hadn't got a clue what he was on about. But boy, if your kids are talking to you, you just make sure you're listening. You haven't got a clue what they're talking about. Oh, and by the way, another quick tip for you. If, as hopefully will be happening a bit more, where you're starting to, you know, drive them again to places, back to sort of, you know, youth groups, to clubs, to scouts and brownies and guides and sport events or whatever it is, please do not ever say to yourself, I'm just a glorified taxi driver. Because, again, there'll come a point where they don't need you to give them a lift anywhere. And I found sometimes my best conversations with my kids happened in the car. Because you're not looking at each other face to face. You know, you're side by side and it's a bit more relaxing. And that, just that environment, you might suddenly create a conversation that might not have happened in any other context. So don't resent being a taxi driver. It could be a real opportunity and a privilege to be able to do it. My kids both drive themselves now. And I'll tell you, sometimes it's like, they've left home, both of them now, but we would have less time because they became more independent. So treasure the times when they're still dependent on you, because it can create not just a conversation, but a really important connection as well.
I like that advice, particularly from a more experienced dad to a younger dad like me, you see. So, one of the things that you mentioned in the book, and this I really like because I've kind of tapped into this a little bit myself in the past, is how our brains work and how we're evolutionarily, I sometimes say that word right, sometimes don't, adapted to the kind of modern world. And I've had guests on here speaking about this, but you talk about it in a very simple way in terms of our kind of two brains. Can you delve into that with us for a bit, Paul?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if people want to go into even more depth, I'd recommend the book called Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman. But in his book, he talks about, and again, it's something Plato talked about, again, thousands of years ago. But Daniel Kahneman talks about, you know, two systems in our brain, system one, system two. System one is your fast brain, primitive, emotional, your desire for survival, so your fight or flight response. Man alive, you can't say evolutionary. I can't say the word response. We'll do that again. But your fight or flight or your freeze response, your desire for food, it's all very much primitive, emotionally driven. So fantastic on the savannah 200,000 years ago, because, you know, you want to notice threats. You want to notice the saber-toothed tiger. You don't want to be ultra positive and go, it looks friendly to me. You want to see it as a potential threat, because you might have been out there hoping to get some gazelles for lunch. But if you're not careful, if you ignore the challenge, the fear, you won't be having lunch. You'll be someone's lunch. So we actually have an inbuilt negativity bias where our brains actually prioritize bad news. I talk about, it's like negativity can stick to the brain like chewing gum, like Velcro, because in some ways we've evolved to make sure we notice negatives that could in some way harm us. Problem is, we sometimes ignore the positives as well. Now, when we're born, that part of our brain, sometimes still known as your, not just your primitive emotional, but your hunter-gatherer brain, which helped us survive on the savannah 200,000 years ago and now to deal with what we've got in life now. The thing is, that is the most dominant part of our brain. But when we're born, it's fully matured. But Daniel Kahneman talks about, and I represent that in the book as you red baseball cap. It's the red brain, the red cap brain. Daniel Kahneman talks about system two, which is our slow brain, our more logical, rational brain. If you want to think about it, red cap's the kid, the blue cap's the adult. Now, fascinating is that red cap, fully matured. We know how to survive, instinctive, reactive. We've got all that. But Our blue cap, our more logical, rational part of our brain, that helps us to reflect and go, hang on a minute, I know that sounds like a great idea, but what will the consequences be if you steal your mum and dad's car and you're only eight? Might not be great. But that part of your brain, the more adult, the blue brain, that does not fully mature, Joe, believe it or not, until we're in our mid-20s. So your 11-year-old daughter, her red cap, primitive emotional brain, fast brain, fully matured. The blue cap that is growing and evolving and we can still tap into, but it won't be fully matured until we're in our mid-20s, mm-hmm. which might explain what is sometimes described as the behaviour of teenagers that can be impulsive, that can be reckless. It's why when you go to insure your 17-year-old, you get car insurance for a 17-year-old, it's going to cost you a lot more than if they were 37. But it's because actually it's not just that they are going through a teenage phase and they're being bad or whatever. It's there's so much going on in their brain particularly, and that more mature, rational, logical part of their brain hasn't actually matured yet. So again, if you want to find out more about it, the Yes Book, I suppose, goes into it in a really simple way and an accessible way. But if you really want to go into the depth and get a few more big words than I give you, then check out Daniel Kahneman's book, Thinking Fast and Slow.
Mm. Yeah, it's a really fascinating topic, how our brains are evolved. And I think the thing that happens as well with, I think, kids that are in their early teens as well, is something called their executive function isn't fully formed as well, isn't it?
That's so right.
That kind of hampers all of this as well, in terms of kind of...
Executive function is the blue cap.
Yeah.
The adult brain. And there's so much happening in the adolescent brain as they go through puberty. It's harder for the teenagers to access that blue cap. So it's like you see this person in front of you, particularly, you know, beyond 13, you know, you could have your kids could be taller than you. You know, the people with lads, their voices are breaking and other things are happening bodily in your children. So you're almost like looking at them thinking, well, you're more or less you're an adult.
Mm.
Well, they might begin to look like an adult, but that doesn't mean that their brain is quite caught up. Their brain could be still some quite far away, a few years behind being an adult brain, even though physically they are looking like adults.
Mm. And that's going to throw a lot of parents now. They're going to be thinking, hang on a minute. I need to have a rethink about how I'm approaching my son or daughter at this particular point in time. So,
I think so. And it's good to try and treat them, you know, as adults on one level. And because we want to encourage that rational thinking and debate and discussion and what do you think of that. And so encourage that. But please don't think that they have now got this fully matured, rational, logical brain and will always know how to manage their feelings, because the blue cap is what you call upon to try and manage the emotions of red cap. That isn't easy to do for adults, never mind teenagers.
Mm. And you place ownership and kind of choice. You know, you've mentioned choice already in this discussion today. You place that at kind of pretty very much at the centre of kind of what you teach. And there was a part where you talk about event plus response equals outcome in terms of.
Yeah.
In terms of what happens in our lives, if you like. But you really focused in on this idea of how you respond to something is what generates the outcome. And this is quite a powerful thing for not just kids, but also adults to learn. How I'm responding to this situation can either pour water on it or fuel the flames.
Sorry, Joe. In the book, I call it the magic formula, as you say, E plus I equals O. Now, what I would say is, for years, without realising it, I lived by a different formula. And my formula was E equals O. So if that's the event, well, you know what the outcome is going to be. If I get a step back, you know what the outcome is going to be. If you don't return my phone call, you know what the outcome is going to be. If you criticise me, we know what the outcome is going to be. It's like, whoa, 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 whoa. No, hang on a minute. Yes, you've had an event, and it's not always a good event. Sometimes it is, but sometimes it's a challenge. But the outcome hasn't been set in stone. It's not inevitable. It's also how you interpret the event and how you respond or react to it. Now, if you're in your red cap, you react without thinking. you know, it's fast brain. And that can have its advantages at times because you've got to make quick decisions. But other times, it's like now thinking about adults, it's like you reply to that email because you felt upset and angry. I'll flip and well tell them, yeah, well, that was fast brain. But guess what? Now you're not talking to your relative because of that email you sent, or you're not, you've just lost a piece of business. That wasn't just because of the email you got. That was also to do with your reply, your response or reaction that got the outcome. And I've had this situation relative in Australia. He emailed me a few years ago. I felt really upset and angry and emotional, wanting to throttle him. And I remember thinking, if I send the email I want to send, him and I will no longer be speaking. And now, but I had the maturity to think about Blue Cap, and I'm thinking, well, is that the outcome I want? Am I happy that him and I may no longer be speaking? Because at the moment, I so want to just react and reply. But hang on a minute. The outcome hasn't been decided. Just because he sent me this email doesn't mean we're going to fall out. I'm in this equation. I'm in this formula, the magic formula. And so I actually slept on it, took a bit of time, calmed down. The next day, choose, remember sumo in Latin, to choose. I chose to de-escalate the issue. We've still got a really good relationship. But if I'd have replied immediately, there's a good chance him and I won't be speaking. And when I would, when you'd say, how come you two aren't speaking? I'd go, because of the email he sent me. It's because of the email. I get that. But also your response to it, Paul. That's why you got the outcome. And what I'm trying to help children to do, young people to do, is to recognize that when things don't go right at school, that's the event, maybe. But your responses to the event could be quite different. And you'd end up with different outcomes. And so if you're saying I'm struggling at maths and your reaction is to that event, I'm hopeless at maths, there's no point in trying, you'll get a certain outcome. But if your response to that, I'm not doing well at maths, is I struggle a bit with maths, if I'm honest, I need to get some more support and ask for some help. And then you get some help and you get some support, you end up with a different outcome. And life is all about, it's not just the event, it's how you respond or react to it that will influence your outcomes. And we've got choices in that. But it's not easy when you're a kid to recognize you've got choices. You know, they made me do it. Why did you hit them? Because they hit me first. Fair enough. Still a choice. Could have done something different. You know, why did you steal so-and-so? Why did that happen? Well, my mate said to do it. Yeah, well, you did have a choice. Well, I didn't really. You know, you did. You had a lot of pressure, but you did have a choice. And what I'm just trying to help children understand, young people, but I think adults need to as well, is, you know, don't be fatalistic and just go, outcomes happen because of an event. No, outcomes happen because of your response to the event. It's a bit, and you can flip it in a positive way. You know, someone might say, right, Joe, I'm going to give you 10 grand to start a business. That's your event. But but your outcome isn't based on your 10 grand. Your outcome is based on what you do with that 10 grand.
Yeah.
You know, Sir Clive Woodward helped coaches England to win the Rugby World Cup in 2003. Now, his response to that could be, I'm at the pinnacle of all I've ever learned. I don't need to learn anything else. I need to got a certain outcome. His response to winning was to still remain curious. When I sent him my sumo book, he contacts me and said, I'd love to spend some time with you. I think I can learn from you. So he continues to learn and evolve in his thinking because his response to his success is not to think, I have now succeeded, I have now arrived. His response to success is to celebrate it and go, what's next? What else do I need to learn? How can I be remain curious? Who can I learn from? And that's why in life we all get different outcomes to each other, even though some of the events are similar. It's all about our response. It's all about our choices.
Yeah, and I love that because it runs kind of parallel with kind of not only just the ownership, but also kind of victim mentality. And, you know, the first thing that sort of springs to mind is, you know, is blame. And there's two things that I want to say on this, because we all have a tendency to blame others for how we're feeling, and how we feel is down to us. It's our responsibility how we feel. And when you say to someone, how you feel is your responsibility, it kind of like it sends them into like a brain malfunction, because no one's ever said that to them, because all they've ever learned is how I feel is someone else's fault. So when you say to someone, or how you feel is your responsibility, it's kind of a mind-blowing thing. But what's interesting at the minute, and I was pondering this morning, particularly in terms of kind of health and fitness at the moment, a lot of people are saying, well, the gyms are shut, I can't do anything because the gyms are shut. And I've seen it within dad's communities at the minute. It's the kind of lockdown paunch or the lockdown podge or whatever people are calling it, you know. But realistically speaking, most people have got a pair of arms and a pair of legs, a pavement outside their house. There is no excuses that you can't do anything at all. But what people have got in at the moment is into this mindset of, oh, because the gyms are shut, I can't do anything. Well, that's not really strictly speaking true. You can do something. You can't do what you wanted to do, but you can still do body weight exercises. You can still do a run. Totally. You can still do a walk. You can still go on your bike, you know. But people have got into this kind of mindset of, I can't do anything. You know what I mean?
You've opened up not a can of worms, but a can of conversations by some of the stuff you've said. I think people can, you know, people can trigger feelings in you, but I would say what you then do with those feelings and the meaning you give those feelings and how long you experience those feelings, you've got a lot more control over than you realize. So someone, you know, if someone says now as a result of this podcast, you know, puts a nice sweary comment in social media and goes, I would reckon Paul McGee's the most boring guest you've ever had, I won't feel, oh, whoopee, that's great. Can you make that go viral, Joe? There'd be initial sense of, oh, it's not great to hear. But maybe that's triggered something in me, because maybe deep down, I think I'm boring. So it's not just about what they've said, but how I've interpreted it and processed it. But also you could go, okay, not a great thing to hear. I didn't exactly feel ecstatic if you say, boring voice, boring guest. I'm not exactly thrilled to hear it, but how long I hold on to that feeling is very much something that I can have some control over. And I think we're also, in terms of feelings, I think some people are saying, well, I can't do any exercise, and to be honest with you, Joe, I don't feel like it. And it's almost like we're waiting for, not motivated. Well, I've got this phrase, right feelings follow right actions. Feeling, in three words, feelings follow actions. So often people think, I'll take the action when I feel like doing it. Well, you could be waiting a long time. So I had an event this morning, started at 8:30. I want to be in my office. I mean, I prepared yesterday, but I want to be in my office 8:15, ready to rock and roll for this big event I've got, where people are dialing in, not from the UK, but from European offices to hear me speak. And yet, I make a decision every day. I'm going to go for a walk first thing. When I woke up this morning, it's still dark. Do I decide? Oh, I don't feel like it. Yeah, but feelings follow actions. So I go for my walk no matter how I felt. And if someone's thinking about taking some form of exercise but I don't feel like it, fine. Don't worry that you don't feel like it. Do it anyway. You don't have to become a victim and a hostage to your emotions and your feelings. By the time I'm walking, it's getting lighter. There's a reservoir near where I live. All of a sudden, the sun's starting to come up. It looks amazing on the reservoir. I'm joined by a few ducks and one thing and another. And I'm thinking, wow, how good is this? But if I'd given in to my initial feelings, I'd still be at home, having a cup of tea, having a little read and scrolling on my phone. So I think in life generally, it's a big topic you've opened up here, Joe, and I'm not saying we're going to have explored it fully, but feelings follow actions. Mm. Don't always be driven by your feelings. Who's driving your car, your feelings or your values? And if your value is, I value my body, I value my health, well, take some action to help that happen, and hopefully the feelings will follow. But if you're deciding, I'll only do something today if I feel like it, who knows where your feelings will take you today?
Yeah. I had the same this morning, funnily enough, actually, because I did my meditation and stuff, and I'd planned out my day, and I knew I needed to do a workout, my Monday morning workout, and it was so comfortable being inside. And in the end, I was like, right, okay. And I made myself a cup of tea, and I've got my gym set up in the garage, so I'm going to make myself a cup of tea and a glass of water. And at the end of each set, I'm going to have a sip of tea. And then I gradually coaxed my way out and made a start on it. And then an hour later, come into the kitchen, everyone else is up, and have a bite to eat and stuff. And I felt fantastic. But you don't get to that point until you... But yeah, I have it regularly where I just don't feel like it. But I know once I'm 10 minutes into it, then totally. It's done. It's done. So
absolutely, totally.
It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you today, Paul. And there is so much stuff in the book that we're just simply not going to get into it in like an hour or so's podcast. And I'm pretty sure that I'm going to be inviting you back for a part two on some of these different conversations that we could go severely deep into. But I do appreciate you speaking to me today. It's been an absolute honour, sir.
Great. Well, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And you're probably right. There's so much more we could talk about.
What is the best way for people to find out about you, about the work you're doing, link up with you on social media, any other projects that you've got coming up at the moment?
Sure. I think on social media, I'm particularly active on Twitter and on Instagram. And the handle for both those is @thesumoguy. So Instagram and Twitter, you can track me down on LinkedIn, you know, Paul McGee. I'm Managing Director of PMA International. And if you want to go to my website, thesumoguy.com, and that just finds out. And also there's a link from thesumoguy.com to Sumo for Schools. Okay. And you might want to find out about, I've set up a foundation with a colleague of mine, a not-for-profit. And we're trying to just support kids and schools in whatever way that we actually can. And in terms of further projects, I suppose it's just keep on doing what I'm doing. You know, I've got this phrase, words change worlds. So that whether that's my written words, you know, in that I've written 12 books so far, or whether it's my spoken words, whatever the age group is, I'm just hoping words will change worlds for positive. Because I've gone through a lot of crap in my life, and it's been the words of other people like that. Within every adversity, there is a seed of equal or greater opportunity. Words impacted my world. So I think it's my responsibility, if I'm honest, Joe, in whatever form I can, to pass on what I've learned from my struggles, from the occasional success, so that words can have a positive impact on other people as well.
Excellent. I love it. I really do love it. And that segues very nicely into my final question, which I ask everyone that comes on my podcast. Paul, what is it in life that gives you meaning?
What is it that gives me meaning would be that sense that we, you know, are we here for a reason, or do we give life a reason? Whatever your answer is, I think having a why is important. And what gives my life meaning is actually thinking that for whatever years I'm on this planet, and I've been on them 56 so far, that maybe one or two people along the way have been helped and they experience some meaning and purpose in their lives, and maybe overcome some obstacles and challenges because of something I said that's helped them. That gives me a meaning. That gives me a why to get up every single day.
Excellent. I love it. I love it. And it does show. It does show in the way you present yourself and the way you go about what you do. So yeah, I do. I do like that a lot. Hell of a lot.
Cheers. Thanks, Joe.
Paul, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'm gonna send you on your merry way, sir. But thank you very much once again.
Okay, great. All the best, Joe, and all the best to all the dads listening as well. Take care.
Excellent. Cheers, Paul. Cheers. A big thank you to Paul McGee for joining me today. As he mentioned, you can check him out over on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. His website is thesumoguy.com, and his new book is Yes, The Sumo Secrets to Being a Positive, Confident Teenager. Now, as I said, it's a great book and certainly suitable for 11 years up based on my own daughter's experience. So I would thoroughly recommend going and checking it out. It's great for kids, young people, but also parents as well, because I read through it and a lot of the concepts in it are really easy to take away and work with. And Paul uses the use of acronyms on a regular basis, so you can really remember and embed this stuff quite easily. One thing I've noticed is a lot of the self-knowledge we begin to acquire in later life, we could really have done with when growing up. But the problem is that you just don't learn this stuff. And as Paul and I mentioned, there is still this legacy of perfectionism and academia, which creates an all or nothing mentality towards objective perceptions of success. The reality is that the world is changing, and the movers and shakers of tomorrow will need to be adaptable, able to pivot and think outside the box. The key to this is developing an awareness of how their mind, emotions, and neurology can work for them and against them, and working in harmony with this, rather than grinding against it. And Paul's book is an excellent, simple, and well thought out journey down the road to becoming a positive, confident teenager, and indeed, adult too. There's also a video of this interview over on the Guild of Dads YouTube channel, and you can link up with me over on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook using the handle @GuildofDads. I'm teaching you how to follow a simple system and plan, just like many of my guests, in order to transform all areas of your life so that you can live more purposefully with much greater fulfillment and meaning. It's all in my ebook, The Dad Blueprint. You can grab it free over at guildofdads.com/dad. Now, Guild of Dads is growing on a week-on-week basis. We have a Facebook group. You can check it out over on Facebook, the Guild of Dads Facebook group. There's some excellent discussion that goes on over there on a weekly basis, and you can get tips, tricks, and support in your journey as a dad amongst a group of like-minded fellas over there. So check it out, Guild of Dads Facebook group. If you like what I'm doing, by all means, reach out to me. I love hearing from you. And also leave me a review or rating on whatever podcast directory that you're listening to this on. Now, in order to have a positive impact on the world, we improve ourselves and inspire others. The fee for this show is that you share it with others so that they may benefit from anything you find useful or interesting. If you know someone that could do with improving their relationships, could do with a life rethink or different perspective, share this episode with them. The best bit, you don't have to tell them why you're sharing it with them, but it could be just what they need to hear. Hopefully, you find something insightful in every episode, so share it with dads you know. In the meantime, live a life of vision, action and meaning, apply what you hear, and we'll see you next time.